The Infrastructure Show is brought to you by Wyss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and materials scientists, solving complex problems in contemporary and historic structures since 1956. Learn more at wje.com.
Welcome to The Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
The electrical grid of the United States is an enormously impressive feat of engineering that is critical to the economic and social functioning of the nation. But the fact is, it is basically a century-old power grid, not simply inefficient, but vulnerable to cascading breakdowns due to both natural and man-made events.
The smart grid is a strategy for modernizing the electrical grid. It's an automated network that directs the movement of electrical power using information and communications technology to collect data on electricity supply and demand to improve efficiency, reliability, and sustainability of electric power. Today, we discuss this important topic with one of the nation's leading experts on the smart electrical power grid, Masoud Amin, who is professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Minnesota. Masoud, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about the smart grid concept, that is, what it is, how it works, and what it can do for us?
Certainly, I'd be delighted to. There was a major blackout in the West Coast in 1996, August of 96, that blacked out the entire West Coast because a line in the border of Oregon and California had sagged because of overvoltages. Too much was going through it. It got hot and sagged into a tree. It created a major blackout that was blacked out 7.5 million consumers, that caused economic losses about $1.5 to over $2 billion. So 9 months after that, basically a report came in IEEE Spectrum that if we had had better sensors, better automated systems, this could have been avoided. So 3 months after that, I got a call. I was in St. Louis, got a call in my office from EPRI, Electric Power Research Institute, which is the central R&D for all the utilities. They invited me to meet with them and present to them. This was in July of 1997. So when I went there, I shared with them the concept that I called smart self-healing grid, the overlay of advanced sensors that are measuring about 20 times a second rather than every 2 to 4 seconds the way utilities were operating, algorithms, analytics, and communication network with security built in to integrate, to synthesize, to provide real-time situational assessment and awareness, and then closing the loop, making it into actionable intelligence, and if possible, to automate that with human beings just monitoring, supervisory monitoring what's going on. And they liked it. They liked it so much that they asked me if I'm willing to move to Palo Alto and become manager of mathematics and information sciences at EPRI for our nation's utilities. Being a tenured faculty, it was hard to give that up, and it was a difficult challenge. But I decided, you know, I was in my mid-30s, and that was a good time to look into what I can do to transition technologies beyond defense into commercial sector. So my wife and I, who is also from St. Louis, we looked in it and did that. So when I moved to EPRI in January of 98, that was my first presentation to research advisory board at EPRI. That was to enabling a secure smart self-healing grid, the overlay of sensors, communication, next generation electric power systems that use digital technologies such as sensors, computers, distributed, if you will, measurement and management that are with security built in and controls in parallel overlay on top of the electric power grid. So similar to the aircraft. Think of an aircraft having dynamical systems like a transformer or like a generator or a substation being another aircraft. If we are flying squadron of aircraft or many squadrons, what happens if 1, 2, 3, 4 aircraft are knocked out? Can we still carry out the mission? So I use the same concept, but with different mathematics, with different dynamical equations for them, saying that if a generator goes down, if a line goes down, if transformers go down, in variety of areas, can you still keep the lights on? And how can you, in a sense, dynamically reconfigure and save the system? And we did that. I got a 58% of funding for a major initiative came from my budget at EPRI, and 42% I received it from Pentagon. We funded an EPRI Department of Defense Complex Interactive Networks Initiative in May of 98. It was a three-year initiative through 2001. And funded 108 professors, including at University of Illinois and other universities, MIT and Caltech and Minnesota and Wisconsin, 108 professors and over 240 grad students and postdocs in 28 U.S. universities, along with 52 utilities and grid operators, provided feedback to me behind the scenes and as part of our advisory committee. And we extracted 24 technologies out of that initiative in July through September of 2001. Umbrella over seven of them, I called it Smart Self-Healing Grid. That included algorithms for fast situational assessment, dynamic risk assessment, automation at a building level, at a distribution system, and also at a large-scale high-voltage connection. The kind of applications. And a lot of that technology, after 9/11, I directed all the security of our nation's utilities, all the security R&D, I moved it to post-9/11 work. And on a personal note, on that day, on that tragic day, September 11, 2001, I was less than a mile from Pentagon, briefing the White House, OSTP, NSA, and Pentagon officials on exactly the progress on that joint initiative between us and DOD, and on basically how do you save large-scale lifeline infrastructures that are under stress, how do you save them from catastrophic failure. That work has moved forward, and now there are more than 100 projects as part of the stimulus plan that industry puts about 60% of the funding into them, as well as quite a bit at all levels, whether they're rural co-ops, they're major interconnections. And it's a global phenomenon that has taken off in China, in India, in European Union, South America, all over.
So let me interrupt for a second. Can you jump ahead? What of this is actually implemented on the ground today?
Oh, there are many. Actually, Department of Energy had an excellent update on some of the pilot projects, over 100 pilot projects that are implemented already. If you Google IEEE Smart Grid Newsletter, IEEE Smart Grid Newsletter, I serve as chairman of that newsletter. It's available to the public. Please look at the lead article in the February 2013, and these are 800-word article on what has been done in the United States. It was a total of $7.8 billion smart grid investment grant. And actually, state of Illinois is one of the states that is leading several projects. In terms of what has been done, to give you a few highlights of it, there are 99 projects under that are the private sector investment has been $4.4 billion. The government investment has been $3.4 billion, and one of them is on demand response. 62 out of the 99 projects are implementing advanced metering, customer systems, and time-based rates to reduce electricity consumption during peak demand and overall consumption of electricity. An example of it, in Oklahoma Gas and Electric, they have a system-wide rollout of demand management technologies to 120,000 customers. And there are several utilities, Marblehead, for example, Municipal Lighting Department in Massachusetts, and Sioux Valley Energy in South Dakota, have published a quantitative assessment of their efforts and how much it reduced consumption from 5% to 37% among participating customers compared to control.
Yeah, I'm interested to ask because it was so interesting to hear the origins of the work in a defense context and in a context for how a system can continue to operate under stress and when parts of it have been lost. And it sounds like, however, maybe now the real drive for it is municipalities and private organizations and companies looking for ways to save economically and be more efficient. Has the push for it kind of shifted? I know it probably serves both purposes, but is economic efficiency what drives a lot of people to look at a smart grid now?
Tom, precisely. At the end, it should make sense to the consumer. And what do consumers really care about? They care about reliable service, good quality service, especially for increasingly digital economy, digital devices that can tolerate very little fluctuations, not only in the reliability, but also in the power quality. The near perfect electricity that we install power conditioning for, etc. And then the other part they care about, a lot is about cost, benefit to them, benefit to the consumer, and also many care about CO2 emissions, how to reduce emissions as part, as a long-term benefit to all of us and to assist in reducing the footprint that is contributing to climate change. But utilities similarly look at O&M savings, and they have currently there are about 63 projects to reduce cost of meter operation costs. And they have less vehicles basically traveling while reading meters, and emissions and fuel consumption that arise from support of customer services reducing. And they're showing the improved reductions from meter operation ranges from 13 to 77%. An estimated cost in vehicle miles, fuel consumption, and emissions to be between 12% to 59%.
And you mentioned as an overlay, I remember when you were first talking about initially suggesting the system when you went to the West Coast, described it as an overlay of sensors that would increase the amount of readings that were taken. When you use the word overlay, does that suggest that this is a system that doesn't require the existing infrastructure to be changed but can be laid on top of it?
Tom, if we have a clean slate, if we can design it from scratch and include these smart, secure chips together with the vendors in every refrigerator, every air conditioner, every dishwasher, every HVAC system, that's ideal. But realizing that that's not going to happen on every transformer, every switch, every substation, every generator. But given that we are really inheriting analogous to the aircraft or squadron of aircraft or entire logistics system, we are inheriting a marvel of 20th century engineering, what National Academy of Engineering and a Blue Ribbon panel led by Neil Armstrong selected about 13 years ago as the greatest, basically, achievement of engineering in the 20th century, the North American power grid. We are inheriting that, and there is about $1.1 trillion invested in it, over 90% by the private sector. How do we retrofit it? But if we are designing it from scratch, we have a new campus, we have a new building, we have a new city that we are designing. A lot of this can be built in rather than glued on or moved on as an afterthought on top of it. So I have done both. I have done both retrofitting on top of the existing system, similar to the aircraft, that you are not changing the aircraft. You already have the aircraft or the logistic network. You're just improving it with this overlay of basically sensors and informatics and analytics and augmenting the overall, overall reliability, resilience, and security of the system.
So can you give us a sense of how the system would function in the case, so you described the case on the West Coast where a cable was overloaded and sagged and struck a tree. So when you have an interruption like that, how does this smart grid respond and how does it work?
If your listeners could look at Scientific American May of 2007 issue, I wrote an article in there called Preventing Blackouts. So May 2007 Scientific American article called Preventing Blackouts, and I showed millisecond by millisecond how would this help, how would such a self-healing grid kick in. So let's say the lightning, when it strikes, it's really fast. It hits at, let's say, at the speeds that are within hundreds of a second. So in that paper, I show how these smart protection devices, rather than measuring every 2 to 4 seconds, because 2 to 4 seconds is too late, electrons travel at nearly the speed of light. You need quick identification, even in cases precursor identification. If there are precursors to a cyber attack, often they can be identified, such as probing, scanning, and so on. Especially on critical infrastructure, we can see precursors, or a line is heating up, or a line or a transformer and substation are getting close to failure. So in that one, I show exactly the corrective action, the localization that occurs within a fraction of a second. So even in a one-tenth of a second, corrective action is taken. And then within half a second, there are a fast risk assessment, and it actually reconfigures the rest of the system to limit the damage area. And within 10 seconds, it has restored the whole system back. Within 60 seconds, everything is back to normal.
So what are the actions? Are we talking about rerouting flows on a network?
There are really five pillars. Part of it is that, but there are limits to how much you can reroute. So in all the assessments and all the implementations we did, there are five pillars. Number one, anticipation of disruptive events. Almost like a game of chess, that you don't play one move at a time. You expand the game of chess several moves as much as you can, computationally, mentally possible. Here we are doing the same. We look for potential disruptors, and we even game the system. We run what I call dynamical stochastic game theory, automated way, attacking and protecting the system. And that's what we did after 9/11 as part of my team's effort, my work that I led. Anticipation of disruptive events. Number two, look ahead simulation and look ahead contingency analysis, which is the game of chess you're expanding ahead. Number three, so you're prepared. As you recall, both President Eisenhower and Churchill had a quotation, plans means nothing, planning means everything. But here you're doing it fast using some of the gaming boards that our kids buy, such as Alien, where others use for gaming. We use them and we bundle them together. They run faster than supercomputers that we would have bought 10 years ago. So you can do a lot of this on the fly, similar to the aircraft that Israeli pilot was flying, but helping the pilot. Number three is fast isolation, fast sectionalization, reducing, if you will, the how fast the potential trouble area can propagate. And then finally, adaptively reconfiguring the system. We call it adaptive islanding and localization of the effects to that. And then final one is what I call self-healing and restoration. And all of this happens within fractions of a second, within milliseconds to hundreds of the second. And the breakdown falls under three primary functions. Number one, real-time monitoring and reaction, which allows the system to constantly tune itself to an optimal state. Number two is anticipation, which enables the system to automatically look for problems that could trigger larger disturbances. And finally, rapid isolation, which allows the system to isolate parts of the network that experience failure from the rest so that the problem does not cascade and avoid disruption and to enable a rapid restoration.
I'm curious, based on your general sense of what the tolerance of the political system is for change and what the interest in the public as you watch this develop, what would be your guess as to how long it might take before the whole country might have a smart grid if it is something that continues to be, that people respond to as desirable?
You know, it will take a long time, probably two decades. But this is how, when you upgrade such a fundamental infrastructure that underpins our economy, our quality of life, and everything we do. And unfortunately, a lot of infrastructure, we take it for granted. It's invisible to us unless something happens, something falls. We use a bridge. I witnessed the collapse of 35W Bridge. We only notice it when it's gone. And when it unfortunately creates loss of life. Similar with the water, wastewater management, pipes, same here. The good news is for smart grid, the last 4 years, quite a bit of good down payment has been put in place in terms of both the transmission, something called synchrophaser measurement units that give you that 20 measurements per second, integration of that into the system, in terms of distribution, in terms of meters at the end-use customers. So to put it in context, Then 2003 blackout happened, and I gave congressional briefings on behalf of IEEE, American Society of Mechanical Engineers, and National Science Foundation to the Congress. Both sides, Republican and Democrat, told me that this makes perfect sense, but however, not this year, Dr. Ami. We have other priorities. So us as citizens, we make a choice. What do we want to be done? Do we really care about outages that happen in New York, New Jersey, Louisiana, the Gulf states? Or do we only notice it when it happens to us and then we have a short attention span? We are a lot more like firefighters. Culturally, we enjoy putting fires out. We build heroes from putting fires out. We are not very strategic.
So who has the incentive to look and act long-term, or how do we create such incentives?
Great question. You see, here we talked about if you measure it, you manage it. But the truth is that's only a prerequisite. If you price it, you manage it even better. So what's the value of this whole proposition of smart self-healing grid? And I have done a lot of colleagues at EPRI, at myself, at the Brattle Group, have done a lot of assessment in that area. What's the cost of it? We need a stronger grid that is hardened, especially for areas that we are going to need to integrate wind and other renewable sources into the grid. We need a stronger backbone. Currently, we have about 450,000 miles of high voltage line, 100,000 volts and higher, what we call 100 kV and higher in the U.S. Actually, in North America, we need to increase it by 9%. And if we do that, we can integrate 40% of electricity could come from wind. Currently, only 2.7% come from wind. According to AEP in Columbus, Ohio, that owns and operates grid in 17 states within the country. Cost of that 9% increase, about 42,000 miles of high voltage lines, is about $82 billion. That could be done over 10 years at $9 billion a year, which is not much when you think about job creation, how many over 230,000 jobs will be created just by stronger grid per year when it's putting in place.
Did you say that for that $82 billion investment, thereafter we could have 40% of the North American electricity by wind?
Precisely.
That seems like something that would be a huge environmental benefit.
Huge revolution, and that's stronger grid, not even smarter. And most of these lines are going to be direct current, not alternating current. Tesla's original dream was alternating current because it made sense technologically to produce massive amounts of electricity far away from cities and bring them in, because the high voltage grid is 97% efficient. Even today, the high voltage is 97% efficient. Where we lose are at the two ends. Energy conversion, when we turn coal into electricity, that's only 35 to 40% efficient. Then at the end use, at the other end, lighting, as amazing invention by Thomas Edison, incandescent light bulb was, but its efficiency was about only 3 to 5%. It was a good source of heat, but not illumination. We can also transform electricity to be used as the primary fuel, primary energy source for transportation. So reduce oil in our transportation sector by substituting electric plug-in hybrid or totally electric vehicles that are supported by stronger grid.
So, Masoud, this has been tremendously interesting and wide-ranging. There are a lot of implications and complexities to this. It's a topic that we need to continue to discuss, but you've given us some really important insights into the interconnections of components and how we need to monitor and protect ourselves from interruptions and to respond to interruptions. And for that, we really appreciate the time that you've spent in educating us this morning.
I know I've talked a lot, but may I give you a tiny piece on the cost benefit. It's going to be only a 1 minute.
Sure, go ahead.
On the smart grid.
Yes, please.
So we talked about stronger grid and cost benefits of that. Now, what's the smarter grid? The cost of smart grid, and we used a very narrow definition, is about $340 billion to about $480 billion, which is $17 to $24 billion a year over 20 years. Most of it will come from the private sector, or we can consider a public-private national infrastructure bank, especially now with the low interest rates, would be a perfect time. Benefits of that, benefits of smarter and stronger grid, that would cost us total cost 17 plus 8 billion for the stronger, 17 for the smarter, 25 billion to about 32 billion a year. Benefits of that would be cost of outages currently to our economy are between $80 billion to over $188 billion a year, depending what hits us that year. We can reduce the low part, the $80 billion, by $49 billion. Increased system efficiency by about 4.5% will result in 12 to 18% reduction in CO2 emissions, according to Pacific Northwest National Lab. We don't have pricing mechanism currently for carbon, but that's huge. Efficiency reduction by 4% will help in annual savings of $20.4 billion. So right off the bat, we get outages reduced by $49 billion and $20 billion a year in savings from improved in system efficiency, reduction in energy use, that's $70 billion. So it pays, and also it means job creation in every zip code that this is being done. And it makes both political sense, national security, energy security, environmental security, and economic security for us to pursue that.
Very, very impressive. And we really appreciate your laying that out for us. Thanks, Masoud, for talking to us this morning.
My pleasure. I hope I wasn't too verbose.
No, it was wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.